I will. Is that better?
Yeah, that's
all right, great. I think I'm supposed to tell you these official things. This session is being recorded and posted in unedited form to the St. Louis OA website. Anyone wishing to remain anonymous should use a fictitious name. Our anonymity, that's a hard word to say, our anonymity, like our abstinence, is a treasured possession. We ask the help of our guests, especially those representing the press or media, to protect the anonymity of all members present. We hope to hear something which you may take away with you and use. We ask that you eliminate any mention of names in reference to members of OA and that no unauthorized pictures be taken. And I've already told you about this being taped and not edited. We request that two headers, those that are OA members affiliated with related facilities or other anonymous programs, speak only of their personal recovery as OA members at OA meetings in order to help OA avoid endorsement of outside enterprises. So, I'm J-Mo, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Good morning. It's good to see you early today here. I'll be speaking for a little while about my experience with Step 4 and then inviting you all to share for 2 to 3 minutes, should you have something that you would like to share. The title of the session was False Advertising, and that my Step 4 was not fearless. I was utterly full of fear. In fact, on those the lists that you make, you know, for your sponsor around... resentments, fears, harms to others, and sex conduct. My fears list was the longest one. I am utterly fearful. My parents were both very fearful people, and so I'm purebred when it comes to to fears. I think they have a lot to do with how I eat. One of the things that I remembered in doing my food history in step one was that for whatever reason, I don't have many memories of my life before I rode off to school on the yellow school bus. I think I was so enmeshed with my parents that I couldn't tell the difference between me and them or something. Let's push back and make a little more room in the circle here as a few more people are coming in. That's great. Welcome. So I don't remember much until I got to elementary school, and I'm told that I cried and begged for them to let me go home, and that the way to get me to stay at school was my dad would come to school at lunchtime and have lunch with me. And until I started to get so much praise for like the fact that I could read really well, that the whole getting praise and getting good grades thing kind of calmed my fears, and I learned to love school because of all the affirmation that I got there. But I think that those early days in grade school of dad showing up to have lunch with me, you know, helped reinforce the notion that food is comfort. And so I have really, really used food as a comforting mechanism in my life. I was the fattest kid in my class at school and got picked on a lot about that a lot. Can remember... that summer vacations were wonderful when I was a kid, and that my dad was off at work, my mom was out hoeing in the garden, and so I could just like binge like crazy at breakfast. You know, I would make myself like 3 breakfasts, and I weighed, you know, over 200 pounds in high school. I had periods of time in my 20s and 30s when I would lose some weight, but then of course I'd gain a lot more of it back. My worst period of weight gain was in my 50s when I was working in our state capital, where I still work in Jefferson City Monday through Friday most of the time, but live here in St. Louis. I discovered that if you want to binge eat and you want to do it on a budget, go work in our state capital. There's free food in our state capital all day long. So so I you know, because there are all these people who are having their lobby day or their, you know, show off their not-for-profit day, and they've all got food everywhere, and then there's all the people that are, like, having a birthday that day, so come to our office and get it, you know, get this, or it's, you know, this special food from my district day, and so, you know, weird stuff, like it's squirrel gravy day, biscuits and gravy day made with squirrel gravy day. You know, so you can just eat all day long for free in our state capitol, and I did. I would have, you know, I don't know whether to say I had one meal all day long or I said 7 or 8 meals, but I put on more than 100 pounds while working in our state capitol over an eight-year period of time. And I would get home from Jeff City, having stopped at, you know, at least 3 fast food restaurants on the way home, and then still eat dinner, but not wanting to admit what I'd done. And I was really paying the consequences. I had high blood pressure. I've had both knees replaced, one hip replaced, and I'm going to have a shoulder replaced in June. I have terrible arthritis, and the morbid obesity has really, really aggravated that. The top weight that I know that I got to was 431 pounds. Mm-hmm. I had stopped weighing because I just wouldn't go to the doctor if they made me weigh because I was so had so much shame about it. So my doctor, in order to treat my high blood pressure, said, "You just come, tell the nurse I don't weigh because I want to treat your high blood pressure." So I had carpal tunnel surgery and. They weighed me to get the anesthesia right, and I saw the number, and I was like, you know, because I did not want to know that I weighed 431 pounds, and I may have got to more than that at some point. I know that I was basically down to the last pair of pants that I could get into, and they were pretty tight, and when they left, you know, when they were gone, I wasn't sure how I was going to get any more, and that I might just be sitting around the house wearing a sheet over my head with a slit cut in it for all I knew, because I wasn't sure how to find any clothes that would fit me. And I apparently was going to get so large that I just have no choice but to be homebound, is what I thought, because I could not stop. I just could not stop. I would pray to stop, but I could not stop. And in 2010, a whole series of events happened that sort of now feel like God was stalking me. a friend robbed from me, lied to me in order to feed her cocaine habit. And then she made amends to me, confessed what she did, and paid me the money. And I thought, I act kind of like she does about food, although she's, you know, using a different substance that's less acceptable in our society, shall we say. When I had the hand surgery, the surgeon said, "Would you like to lose weight?" And I thought, "I'm here about my hand. Shut up." But it was yet another call to think about it a little bit. My pastor asked me, "Can I help you some way? I can tell that you're in a lot of pain. You seem to be having a lot of mobility problems." And I said, "I don't know what anybody can do but pray for me." And then a friend invited me to come to OA. And she brought me a newsletter and a where and when and said, "OA has really been good for me and I hope you'll come." Now here's the thing I want you to know about this friend. She weighed over 600 pounds. And so you would think I wouldn't want to come, right? Because she's not exactly the poster child for a successful OA person, right, in a way? But it worked. And she was in a motorized wheelchair, and I was afraid I was headed there. But I'd known this woman for years. We worked together on other issues that we care about. And for her to, like, be vulnerable enough, because this was a tough broad. And for her to like be vulnerable enough to tell me this about her life and to invite me to OA mattered a lot. And so I showed up at a meeting because she invited me to come. And I want everybody to remember, because I think a lot of people like won't talk at a meeting, or I don't know, just like have a lot of shame if they aren't the right weight, that somehow they have no right to talk yet. This woman reached me and saved my life when she weighed over 600 pounds, and she said I would weigh over 700 pounds if it wasn't for OA. Any of us can really make a difference to somebody else by telling our story. So it got me to a meeting. I went to my first meeting in October of 2010, and I heard a guy speak at a Super Saturday not long after that who'd lost over 200 pounds, And it gave me a little glimmer of hope that it could happen to me, because it had happened to somebody else. I had no idea how it had happened, but it could happen to me, maybe, because it has happened to somebody else. And it kept me coming back. And in December, on December 1st, 2010, I had heard the messages enough about the need to be abstinent that I thought, well, I'll try a day. They said you just have to do it one day at a time. So I risked a day of abstinence on December 1st, 2010, and it didn't kill me. And so I tried it again on December 2nd, and I got through that one. And I tried it again on December 3rd, and I got through that one, and I've been doing it a day at a time since then. So in February of 2011, I went to the doctor, and I'd only been abstinent for a little while, and I'd lost 20-some-odd pounds, and she took me off of blood pressure medicine. I still weighed over 400 pounds, and I was able to go off of blood pressure medicine. She had sent me to a nutritionist who taught me how to eat for blood pressure, what plan to use. And every time I'd ever used it, over the past 10 years that she'd been treating me for blood pressure, it would work, and I would have some weight loss, but I hadn't been sustaining it in any way, certainly. So I think it's amazing that I was able to go off of blood pressure medicine while I still weighed over 400 pounds. At this point, I've lost about 150 pounds, and now enjoy playouts at the gym, and the quality of my life has improved tremendously because of working the steps with my sponsors, coming to meetings, using the tools. It is an utter miracle that I do not understand. I don't know how it works exactly, but it does. It works when you do the footwork and turn it over to a power greater than ourselves. So that's what's happened to me. Now, around step four, I had a lot of fears about that because I grew up in one of those religions that tells you that you are unworthy and that you deserve eternal punishment. And step four sounded like confession of how awful I am. But I was reassured when I looked at the literature, and it said, those of us who have completed step four have found that taking this searching and fearless moral inventory was one of the most loving things we ever did for ourselves. As we took an honest look at the past, at who we'd been and what we'd done, we began to understand ourselves better. That understanding was the beginning of emotional healing. Many of us have lived our lives up to this point with a secret feeling of shame. We carried deep in our hearts the feeling that we were worthless or insignificant. Often this shame stemmed from unresolved guilt over mistakes we'd never fully dealt with. We had never faced our wrongs honestly and acknowledged them, so we were left feeling ashamed. Writing our fourth step inventory enabled us to begin cleaning up the messes of the past so we could start life over afresh. The self-analysis we do in step four is essential to our recovery from compulsive eating. This step continues a process of transformation which began with our admission of powerlessness in step one, a process of increasing honesty and self-awareness that will gradually free us from our bondage to self. Our past problems have been controlling our actions and feelings for years, often in ways of which we are unaware. As we face the problems, they lose their power to overwhelm and control us. The chains of obsession drop from us one by one, and we are able to know and do our higher power's will more easily without the need to protect ourselves from uncomfortable feelings by eating compulsively. So it was very different than what I suspected it was going to be, and it turned out to be a very loving investment in myself and in my own happiness. It took me a long time to do steps four and five. We actually kind of like did it in shifts where we looked at the resentments and the fears and the harms to others and the sexual behavior in different weeks. And I would go in with my list to my sponsor and then share that part and then go back and work on the next thing a little bit. And as I said, my fears list was the very longest one. But I felt incredibly free, freed by the process, and so loved by my sponsor, who told me that she just wanted to sit there and be God's ears for me. And I that was just a lovely thing that she offered to do. She did not, you know, at no point did she look at me with any judgment or, you know, run from the room in being appalled by anything that I was able to say. And she just really, really modeled loving acceptance of me. It was such a beautiful process. And I will always be grateful to her for the gift of her time and her listening and her gentleness with me. It's amazing how a lot of those fears that I was carrying around, that just saying them aloud just kind of like made them go poof, or made them not have power over me anymore. The things that we are able to say aloud and step forward, it really does, it does help us have a release of an anxiety, a release of a sense that stuff is pushing us down. And it honestly feels like, because I haven't tried to lose weight in OA, I really haven't. I've just tried to work the steps, and weight is like gone with it. It actually feels like somehow saying those things aloud, that they had weight hooked to them, and the weight somehow got released just because I was saying them aloud. That's how it feels. That's how the miracle of it feels. I thought it was kind of neat that this morning's for today turned out to be about fears, since that was my topic of today. So I'd like to close by reading today's for today. To win without risk is to triumph without glory. Pierre Cornell, or however you pronounce that last name, I'm not quite sure. Never risking is never growing beyond fear or ridding myself of it. To explore a cave, confront a friend, dial a number, ask for a raise, change jobs, or just say no, all of these can be acts of heroism, leaps into freedom. To do what others expect so they'll love me is to play it safe. To throw imagination into the ring is an act of courage. It is not easy to risk failure in plain view of those who wait smugly on the sidelines. To be thought foolish or insane, to be thought foolish, that was on my list of fears, you will think I'm a fool. To be thought foolish or insane could well start an avalanche of negative self-judgments, but as I grow, I become more willing to venture out of my safe cocoon. For today, I have the strength to walk through my fears, to take a chance on a new way of life. And that's certainly what I found, is that my fears are still there, but fears don't have to stop you. And OA has helped me go ahead in the things that I want to do despite my fears. If you haven't done a step 4 and 5, I highly recommend it. It is so liberating and such a loving act that you can do for yourself. So I'll close with that and see if you all would like to share something. Come on up. It just says that folks can share for 2 or 3 minutes, and that we should not say our name unless we want people to know our name. So make up one if you need to. So.
Good morning, I'm Amy. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Amy.
Hi, and I'm just wanting to say that I'm really glad to be here with all of you, and I really appreciated your talk. I related to a lot of it, and I hope everybody enjoys their day in recovery. Thanks, Amy.
My name is Margie, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Margie.
First, I want to say thanks for your talk, and it was pretty powerful. I've seen you around for a couple years, but I had no idea about your story. It's the first time I've heard your story. But as far as step 4 goes, my loving sponsor has been loving enough to ask me if I wanted to do some mini step 4s on a particular person or a situation or whatever, and I have, and I've really gotten some healing from them. Even though I still have days where I eat compulsively a little bit, you know, here and there, I'll have a day where I just grab something and I'm not even hungry. And it's always something unhealthy. It's never a vegetable or a fruit or anything like that. And then I feel a little bit bad about it, but I don't feel that bad about it, you know. It's like I'm starting to lose the shame that comes with it, slowly, very slowly. I still have a little bit of shame about that. But I have more shame about just me in general, just as a person, because I was brought up like you were. I was brought up that you should always be ashamed of almost everything, unless you're perfect. And who can be perfect?
Right.
So my mom and dad were good Irish Catholics, yeah. A lot of shame, without even knowing it, not even on purpose. It was just pervasive shame all the time. And they had a lot of shame themselves, too. So that's one huge demon I'm constantly fighting, is shame. So thanks for your time.
Thanks, Margie.
Thanks, Margie.
I'm Mary Bell. I'm a carb addict.
Hi, Mary Bell.
book when it says "top affects my," nothing affected me. I'm an incest and gang rape survivor, and I was walled off in my concrete bunker. Nobody was coming in, and I wasn't coming out. So when I got to AA first, that was my first program, I wanted to do step four the first week, because I thought it was all about beating up on myself, and I was a past master of doing that, you know. Yeah. It took me 16 years to find out that when it says affects my, it means what of my God-given instincts, is being affected. You know, self-esteem, personal relationships. I added it in for women, physical security. Because we all need to be safe in our own bodies. And then emotional security, being able to trust myself and somebody else. And the sexual security, being able to talk openly and honestly with another trustworthy woman. And when I lose those, or think I've lost them, I just really almost go into panic mode. But I don't have to drink over it, smoke over it, eat over it, you know, or take addictive prescription medications over it, which killed my mother with wet brain. A lot of alcohol and addictive prescription medications. Wet brain is not a good way to go. So thank you all very much.
Thanks, Mary Bell.
I'm Martha. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Martha.
Yeah, I could relate a whole lot of your story. Yeah, I grew up, my father was an Irish Catholic, but he was a little more relaxed than, but I ended up having a Catholic education. It was, I don't know, it was a small town, and it was I got into the shame through that, because I really didn't understand, you know. He kind of gave me a perspective on the spirituality, but I didn't get so much of it in the schooling, and I took everything, you know, literal, that we had to do things a certain way, and, you know, went to confession, and I didn't really, I think, know what that was about, except that, you know, I was a bad person, you know, and I had to confess it. So the way has been really wonderful for me. And the fourth step, like you said, I love that expression, I'm God's ears. I'm not sure what my sponsor said, but I felt like she was, you know, and it was transformative for me in a way. It was a much more transformative experience than I ever had, even in my other programs. And I guess what it was she helped me. I let her help me through it. You know, she. I had this like 168 question inventory, or how, and or something like that, some ridiculous number of questions, and she would call and say, "Hey, how's that fourth step going?" And I said, "Well, I'm only up to question number 20." and then, you know, and then when I got through the first section of the inventory, she said, "Hey, why don't we just meet and go over it?" And so, like, I did it in three different parts. And the fears were a big part of it. Like, the first section was childhood, and then resentments, fears, and resentments. I had this long list. And she had me, I didn't know what she was doing, but she started me in with the 6, 7, 8, and 9 by having me pray for the people I resented. And that, you know, if I went from hate to you know, in 20, was it 14 or 21 days of praying? And so, beyond being God's ears, you know, she helped me through the next, into the next steps, with the resentments. And, you know, it just, like, changed my life as it was then, right, within weeks, because I was able to do an amends after my attitude changed with two people that I feared the most and resented the most. So, anyway, I think people can relate to that, but I just recommend it a lot, and I'll let somebody else share.
Thank you, Ms. Martha.
My name's Christine. I'm a compulsive reader.
Hi, Christine.
I'm watching the literature table. That's why I'm not in the circle.
Okay.
Nothing going on, but...
but you're ready.
Yeah, but I'm willing. There's that willingness again. But yeah, you know, the fourth step was a game changer for me, you know, especially 4 through 9. And for me, you know, the big book talks about getting rid of damaged or unsalvageable goods. You know, it talks about taking personal inventory. And I think what really stood out to me was where it says nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty, you know, since we went back through our lives. And, you know, to be able to, you know, get those resentments out and the fears and the sex harms and the harms done, but also to be able to see my defects, to see where God-given instincts, what God meant for good, had gone astray, you know. Like, for instance, helping people. I like to help people. But sometimes, you know, I can help people and use them and their problems because I don't want to look at me, you know. So that's a God-given instinct that's gone astray, you know. And, you know, and it's not, you know, beat Christine up hour when you're doing the four step, you know what I mean? But I need to see those defects which have been blocking me from the sunlight of the Spirit. I need to be able to see them, and I need a qualified sponsor to help me point them out. So in 6 and 7, I can ask for their removal, you know, in God's time, not the way I think they should be. But, yeah, 4 and 5, it's hard for me to talk about 4 without talking about 5. But definitely, you know, getting rid of those roadblocks that are blocking me off to God, and God is my higher power. That all that resentment, you know, dishonesty, selfishness, and fear, those main defects, were blocking me off. And as long as I was spiritually blocked, I wasn't going to get any better, you know. So for me, I had to put the food down 100% and take step 1 100% and then work the rest of the steps. And for me, the fourth step, I had to get honest in the fourth step. All my other four steps, I was dishonest, you know, out of fear. And when I got honest, when I was in enough pain where I was willing to be 100% honest and let someone get to know every part of me, not just bits and pieces, and admit that to God and to another human being, it changed my life. So thanks.
Thanks, Christine.
Thanks, Christine.
I'm Elizabeth. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Elizabeth.
And I'd like to say a word about not having to do it perfectly. Because the first one, it helped me a lot to do my first one, even though it was all about, you know, I listed all these angers and resentments and things, but in my fourth step, it was like I justified each of those by listing all the things everybody had done to me. So it was like a victim kind of a step 4. Mm-hmm. But it got it down on paper and out of my mind, and even though I was later to come around and do it again in a different way, and again in a different way, that was what I could do at the time, and that made a huge difference to me. Mm-hmm. So that's all.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Oh, Martha. Thanks for talking about the fears. also, and working helps to know, you know, even people who seem very brave on the outside, they have fears. That's, I think this way of sharing helps me feel like I'm, you know, in a way I feel like I'm being, you know, and I think that's the first time it really took hold in a big way because of the sharing that you do, you know, speaking and sharing afterward.
Thanks. We have about 8 minutes left if anyone else would like to share.
I'm Deb. Gratefully recovering compulsive overeater.
I did.
I've been in the program probably 32 years now.
Wow.
Had significant weight gain during that 32 years, and have been able to maintain that loss for probably 8 years now. And I'm so grateful for always, you know, the best thing I got out of program, I should simplify it and say it's the best thing, but really meaningful to me was that, you know, when I do this, the inventories, and having done three now, just the recognition that, you know, I've got my stuff. And everybody has their stuff. It makes me so, I just feel so good about the person that I can be with now married children, and daughter-in-laws, and, you know, everybody's got their stuff, and it makes it so much easier to be not judgmental about everybody else, because I love the expression, wow, he or she is almost as sick as I am. You know, when I meet somebody, and, you know, and or get to interact with somebody, and right at the moment I'm having some serious, you know, what, with one of my daughter-in-laws, and, you know, I just keep trying to step back, keep my mouth shut. And that's been a rare thing to learn over 30-something years, is that I don't have to have an opinion on everything. Even though I'm getting to be the age where I can make up crap. Nobody even knows. You get to a certain age where it's like, if you don't know the answer, you can just say something, and everybody's like, oh, she's old, she must know. You know? Like, no, I'm making up crap. It's not true. It's just that I want to look like I know what I'm talking about. So I find that when I talk about my own personal experiences, that's true. And I also find that that's very rewarding when I'm trying to relate to, specifically, you know, daughter-in-laws or whoever, just sharing from my own experience, strength, and hope, and not labeling it OA or anything else, you know, just experience, just speak from my own truth. And I think it helps to open doors for sharing with other people, whether they're involved in 12 steps or not. And I find that in the last couple of years, I've gotten much better about, you know, saying, well, you know, I do this. No, I'm going here. I'm going to an OA thing. I'm going, you know, I'm working at the office. What office? It's 12-step office. What's that? And I shared this with a woman just a couple of days ago. Who, when I said Overeaters Anonymous, she laughed. I said, no, really? Really? Overeaters Anonymous. She's like, what? She couldn't believe that there was such a thing. Hmm. You know, she thought I was just making this all up. Hmm. I said, no, really. You know, I have a problem with food. Food is my drug of choice. This is what I do when I, you know, when I'm feeling this or that or whatever and I'm uncomfortable. That's my instinct, is to go to that. She was absolutely dumbfounded and I think mortified that she was laughing and then realized that I wasn't kidding. Mm-hmm. You know, that was kind of interesting. But, yeah, grateful to be here this morning and grateful for your sharing. The reminder of you know, I have been heavier, and I would like to be lighter in some realm, somehow, in God's time. But most recently, I've enjoyed the analogy with... somebody sent me a little video of a dog, and the joke was, I ate a salad today, and the dog's... pouncing on a scale, pouncing on it, barking at it, pouncing on it. It's like, why didn't I lose weight? You know? It's really not. I am that dog. I would pounce on it. You know, it's like, no, in God's time, and I really appreciate so much of what all has been shared, that, yeah, it's, you know, if you go into it looking to lose weight, then I'm still not focusing on what I need to focus on, which is a lot of fear, a lot of anger, a lot of anxiety, a lot of shame, all those important things. Thanks.
Thank you.
Is there any other share?
I'm Ricardo, the possible reader.
Hi, Ricardo.
You said something about having a voice. That just brought back to mind when I grew up, my dad's philosophy, and I don't really think it's true, but children are to be seen and not heard. Mm-hmm. But it's through OA that I have gained my voice. It's still not always out there. Sometimes if somebody else's idea seems better than mine, and I get corrected on that, I say, you got a good idea, I'm just voicing my idea. And, you know, I tend to say, that's a good idea. But I still have my own good idea. But the whole thing about voicing what I think or what needs to be changed.
Thanks, Ricardo.
My name's Margie. I'm still a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Margie.
Still?
Didn't change. I just wanted to really quickly get this off my chest because it's bugging me, and it's been bugging me for the last few days, as I'm starting to realize that I'm feeling a lot of shame and anger that I've actually gained weight in the last year. Mm. And I've been in OA for 3 years now. And I've actually gained about 7 or 8 pounds in the last year. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why, I just need to say that out loud. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks for saying it out loud. Well,
one more.
Yep.
Hi, I'm Clara, compulsive eater, exercise book.
Hey, Clara.
Hi, Clara.
I'm sorry I missed the speaker and nobody shares, but I just wanted to share that I love the part of the first step, which is took fearless, metasocial, fearless moral inventory of ourselves. I had made a profession of taking everybody else's inventory and deciding it was so good of me to decide that they were wrong. And, of course, I would have to be right. And I just love that I don't have to take the inventory of other people. I can observe, I can use my judgment to see if that's a behavior I would want to imitate. Sometimes it would be good for me to speak up to somebody about it. But I'm taking inventory of myself. What a change, what a change. Because I used to look at the dust bunnies under your chair and your chair and your chair. Then all of a sudden, I begin to look at the dust bunnies under my chair. Heaven help me, they are there. anyway, just wanted to say that. Thank you, Clara.
Hi, my name is Tina. Thanks, Clara. I wish I was here a little bit earlier, too. I think as I think about fears, and I appreciate so much what you said, is, you know, trying to figure out when it is a reaction that I need to be having towards someone, when it is a reaction that is protecting myself or the love of myself, and when it is a judgment that needs to go or doing someone else's inventory. And understanding that, I'm really grateful that my higher power gives things to me in quarter teaspoon, tablespoons, half cups, and full cups, because I don't always, I really never get it, to be honest. I just really never get it. I think I do, and then it all changes and shifts. And I learn another tablespoon, which leads to another quarter cup, you know? And I'm so thankful for a higher power that cares for me so much when I can't care for myself. And when I others do not care for me, that higher power is always there with a new direction and a new lesson. I'm willing to listen. But getting over the fears and taking that inventory for myself and trying to, not that I really can, but trying to dissect that. Sometimes I wake up and it's like been dissected. I didn't even know what happened. It just happened, and it's a wonderful thing. And I had a few parts and pieces, and probably none of them made the whole. But it just happened. And so I'm so grateful for being here. I'm so grateful for everyone who has shared, since I've been here about 3 months, everyone who shared, who's helped me to kind of understand parts and pieces so that I can take those more inventories of myself and look at my surroundings and people in my life. Hopefully heal things and make things better for myself and for others. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tina. How about if we join hands and pray the Serenity Prayer as a way to close?
Back in rows,
yeah.
Or leave them for the next
probably
speaker.
Back in rows, and we'll see what happens. Yep.
Okay.